curious, when you were smaller, before you started working or anything, did you ever think of what you'd be or what you wanted to do?
I wanted to become a nurse. But you see, even when I started to work before I didn't even graduate grammar school. I left school on my eighth grade, and I had to have 2 years high school to become a nurse. So I always wanted to become a nurse. I'm the type that don't get sick if I see anything, you know, like that. And I was always good at bandaging, you know, even now. If somebody gets hurt, right away, go by Auntie, she'll take care of you, you know, at home. And it just didn't work out for me to become a nurse. So then they told me to go to night school for 2 years and get my diploma that way. Well, I couldn't because my father had died and I just couldn't make it. But that was my ambition, to be a nurse. And how I got into the tailor shop was, really, you know, the clothing was really funny. The woman that lived downstairs from us was a poor lady, and a lady garment, for the lady garment workers, one of their shops. So I was working at a book binder, Janice Cuneo's book binder.
Your brother got you that job?
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh. And I was only getting, I think, $6.50 a week, which wasn't a heck of a lot. So this woman said to me, you know, we need, she knew I could sew, you know, I was pretty handy with the needle. She said, we need some girls to sew snappers on skirts. They didn't have the zippers, they used to sew snappers. She said, why don't you come and work for our place? So I said, all right. So I quit the other job and went to work with her, and I was getting $8 a week. Oh, what's it say? No, $10 a week. So
had you sewn before at all? Like,
well, I used to sew at home, you know. I used to, if you needed a button on something and I didn't tell my mother to sew it, I'd do it. And so then we were a group that all sat together. We were all girls from the neighborhood. And this one girl, her father had a grocery store. So she used to bring lunch for all of us. A whole loaf of bread, you know, she'd slice up and put lunch meat in between. We all, every day we had lunch that she would bring. We didn't have to bother with lunch. And she'd bring fruit and stuff from the store. Well, she really went to work more or less to get out of the house. Otherwise, she had to work in the store. And this way, she had a lot of fun with the girls. And she'd sit there like this with her feet on the footrest on the bottom, and she'd be sewing, you know. So the boss passed by a couple of times, seen her sitting like that. Then he passed by another time, I guess. Her name was Marie, too. Marie Elise. So finally he called this Sophie, the floor lady, over. He said, you know, I'm getting rid of that girl. She wants to sleep. Let her sleep at home. Because there was no peace with her. It was time for the girl. He said, why should I be paying her for the production that she's giving me? So this Sophie came over and told us, you know, Marie Elise is getting laid off tonight. I said, so the girl says, oh yeah, she gets laid off, we all quit. And that's what we did. A whole 8 of us quit on them that night. So on the way home, I said to this Margaret and Josephine that lived down my street, I said, gee, I said, here I quit one job to come and work over here, and I'm only here a couple of months, and I quit this job. I said, my mother's going to have a fit. So they said, well, don't say anything. Tomorrow, meet us at the L station. They're on Oak Street, and we'll go out and look for a job. So I did. The next morning, I made myself a sandwich, took some food, and I met them at the old station. Well, they had worked in a clothing shop. They used to call it the Royal Tailors. Okay. And I said, but I never worked on a machine, and a power machine, as I worked on a foot pedal machine that my mother had. They said, well, if we get a job, you tell them whatever we say we can do, you say the same thing. So if they'll have to put you near us, and we'll show you what to do. You know, these two girls. Well, the first place that we went to, they didn't need any help. So we went around the corner that had a shop there by the name of the Progress Tailoring Company. So they went up there, and the foreman knew this one girl. She had worked there before. And he said, oh, Marla, she was older than me, about 4 or 5 years old. You know, Margaret, it's so nice to see you. How you been? This and that. She said, well, were looking for a job. So he looked at it, and I was just a punk. I still had my hair down and everything. He said, well, I could use two girls, he said, but I can't use the third. So this Margaret says, well, either three of us or nothing, you know. So he said, well, all right, he's coming tomorrow. He said, because he's superstitious. I never put anybody to work on the day that I hire them. You come in tomorrow at 8 o'clock and I'll put this to work. So we had to kill the whole day. We couldn't go home early and let our parents know that we weren't working. So we went downtown, we went to the Fair Store. They had a department store on Adams. And we, all three of us got in one toilet, you know, up there in the ladies' room, and we ate our sandwich. We went to the State Lake Theater. And then we even walked home from downtown from State and Lake Street so that we'd get home at 5 o'clock, because that was about the time we walked home. So the next day we went into work. So he put them two on a machine, and he put me clean, you know, cutting the threads off the coat, pants. They were in the pants shop. And they had a swinging door from the pants shop to the coat shop. So about 10 o'clock that morning, he comes through the swinging door and he says, little one, get your scissors and follow me. He was going. So I took my scissors, I'm following him. So the girls looked up, you know, and this one girl says, where are you going? I said, I don't know. So he takes me into the coat shop and he says to me, do you know how to handle a needle? I said, yes, I do. So he says, well, see the lining of the coat, base this part of it, and then this part here, which they call a fourth part, somebody had to lay it on the table and straighten it out, and then put some big stitches on there to hold it together, and then it would go to the operator to sew the edges. See? Mm-hmm. And then they turn that around, you know. So he showed me what to do, but I had to stand up and do it by the table there. So then, when I didn't have anything in days to bring me to work, you know, when I didn't have anything to work with, so he'd see me standing there, so he'd come and brought me a chair. He'd call me Little One. He's Little One, he said, they have no work, sit down. And there we were getting $12 a week. Yeah, $12. So I thought it was $2 better off than before. So that night after we got the job, I told my mother that I quit working with Sophie. And then I got a job in a men's clothing place with Margaret and Josephine. She knew them. And I said, and I'm getting $12 a week now instead of 10, you know. So we worked there about 6 months when the union organized, you know, went on an organization drive.
When was that?
1919.
Uh-huh.
See, some were organized and some weren't. See? So then they made a big drive and we had all joined the union. So I went home and I said to my mother, you know, I said, they want us to join the union. And it was only 70 cents to join at that time. So she said, well, what's Margaret going to do? I said, well, they're going to join. I said, you know, they used to work there before. And she said, well, whatever Margaret does, because my mother figured she was 5 years older than me and I should, you know, more or less she took me under her wing, you know. She said, whatever Margaret does, you do the same thing. So that's what I did. I joined the union, May the 2nd, 1919. And we got a $5 raise, so from $12 and up to $17, you know. And then, eventually, you know, I was put on a machine and then piecework, and that's how I started in business.
You were mentioning, Marie, that your mother never worked a day in her life. Do you think that if your father hadn't died, that she might have wished the same thing for you?
Oh, if my father wouldn't have died, I would have probably gone to night school and become a nurse like I wanted to be. You know, I would have probably got my education that way. Yeah. Because they said you go to night school and get your high school education that way, and all you needed was the 2 years. So I'd have probably did that, you know. Unless my father would have his dream would have came true about the store that he was planning on opening up on Broadway, and I'd go to work for him. But I really, that was my one ambition, always to become a nurse. I could be very good, you know. In fact, during the war, when we had the unit here, we used to make bandages, and then we had first aid classes. So I was the chairman. I was sent to the Red Cross to go learn, and then I taught our girls. I was the chairman of the Red Cross unit.
When you first started working, did you think that you'd stay in it so long?
No, I thought I'd get married and quit working, but it didn't work out that way. See, when I was younger, I didn't want to leave my mother with whoever she had to support, you know, the ones that were home yet. I figured she needed my help, and as I grew older, I kept getting kind of picky, you know. So I never married.
Picky then, about the men that you were interested in?
And then my sister that you met downstairs, she got married when she was 18. The brother that's 2 years younger than I am, he got married young. The only one that married at 22 was my kid brother. That's the one that was found in the watermelon, you know, and he's going to be 60 pretty soon. He was 5 years old when my father died. So, I always used to tell my mother that she wanted me to marry because I went to several nice fellas.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this one guy that I went with for about 7 years, he used to get so burned up when I tell him that I wouldn't get married, that my mother needed my help, that he even offered to give me $50 a week to give to my mother for living expenses. And I said, yeah, in case we have an argument, then you tell me you're supporting my whole family. So he got mad and he quit his job and he went to Nashville, Tennessee to work. He used to be a quality manager after mine. And at that time, he was a contractor. He used to work for a place on Michigan Avenue that made $200 and $250 suits. And all he did is just hired people from the Amalgamated to work for him, and he'd make 20 coats. He didn't bother with the pants or the vest a week, and then whatever they paid him, he had to pay the Amalgamated members or union scale, and the rest was his. And I used to see his checks, $300, $350 a week.
Wow.
So he died, five years ago, he was killed in an accident. And when I was working at Heights, he was a quality man over there.
Did you find yourself, in terms of, you know, like say these men that you were interested in, and the women that you got together with socially or whatever, did you find that most of those people were people you had met at work or that were somehow?
No, I had a very good social life in the neighborhood. See, my brothers all belonged to this club. We had a social and athletic club that we all belonged to. And they used to call it the Owl Indians. And there was about 50 girls, about 50 boys and about 75 girls that belonged to the club. And I was working at the theater previous to this, me joining the club, and my brothers belonged to it. In fact, my brother, that's 2 years younger than I am, met his wife there. See, and they were all kids from the neighborhood. And my sister that died 40 years ago, she belonged to it. And we used to have quite a social life. And there were about a block and a half on Clark and Division and North Avenue, there was a dance hall called Columbia Hall. And even when I worked at the theater, after 10:30, when I get through checking my money and all that, I used to take a walk over there and I'd go dance at 12 o'clock. That's when I only required 5 hours sleep, because I'd get home around 1 o'clock and had to get up at 7 to go to work.
You know? Didn't you say that eventually led to some type of a...
Yeah, well, I started getting almost got a nervous breakdown. See, my hands used to shake and all that, so I come down with pneumonia, and when the doctor heard I was putting in such long hours, he says, it isn't that you're working hard. Of course, I worked hard during the day. It was piecework, and I had a hustle, you know. But he said, it's the long hours you're putting in. And then
did you work at the theater? You worked at the tailor shop all day long.
And then I went to work at 6 o'clock. I had to be over at the theater. See, the matinee cashier used to leave at 6. The manager was a friend of ours that was there. And that's how I got the job through him.
Did he offer it to you, or did you go ask him?
No, he offered. He asked me, because he knew my father died, and I was the only one working. And he said to me, how would you like to be cashier? And I said, oh, I'd like it, I said. So this way, whatever I made at night, you know, at the cashier, which was only $20, that went for me, and I used to buy my clothes, and my sister that was, about 6 years younger than I am, I used to buy things for her, you know, and it helped out quite a bit. And I used to like to dress in those days, you know, and we didn't wear a uniform at the theater, so I used to wear something different at night than I wear during the day. And so he offered the job, and he used to take the day cashier's place till 6:30. Because I couldn't make it for 6. I used to work till 4 to 5 during the day. And I'd stop home, change clothes, eat, and walk over to this other place. You know, that's 7 blocks from where we live. I couldn't ride because I had to ride part way and walk the rest of the way anyway, you know.
So
I used to walk. So I'd get there around 6:30, and he used to hold fort till I got there. If I had to work overtime, sometimes I had to work overtime, and we were real busy, then I'd work till 5:45, and I would go right from my day job, I'd go right to the night job, and then he'd go across the street and get me a sandwich, you know, they had a restaurant across the street, get me a sandwich, so I'd have, and when I didn't have any customers, I'd go sneaking, see, because the box office was the side of the lobby there, and it had 2 windows. They used to be a vaudeville house at one time. And then they had like a storeroom off of that, so I used to sneak over there and take a bite and come back and look, nobody there for a ticket, so I'd go and take another bite. And I used to do my nails underneath there when nobody was coming in. So I worked there for 3.5 years.
And you quit that job because of
the theater was sold to Loveliner and Trim, and that theater was privately owned at the time. The man that owned the theater was president of the Locust Square Bank, so he committed suicide. He was in some kind of a scandal with some girl, you know. In fact, he had a mistress. And he was, she had a bungalow where he'd just drive into the garage, and from the garage go right into the house, you know. So I guess he had some kind of scandal. They had quite a bit about it in the paper in those days. And so he committed suicide. So then the wife and she had a daughter and a son. They sold the theater to this Loveliner and Trent, which was a big theatrical firm like Belden and Katz and all that. So this friend of mine that was the manager there where I worked, he started to work for Warner Brothers on the south side. So I went to work for him over there. And it was too far for me to travel back and forth. So then when the doctor said I had to quit, so I just quit. And my boss at the clothing factory where I worked, he gave me a better job where I could make more money. I'd become a lining maker, and it was a better paying job, so I was able to do it.
Did he just give it to you, or was that because he knew that you had to?
No, he knew that I had to. In fact, when my father died, he came to the waste, and that's when he put me on a machine. He said, well, now that you are the breadwinner of the family, he says, you'll need a better job. So that's when he put me in as an operator, machine operator. So then he says to me, how would you like to be a pocket maker? Well, a pocket maker's or a lining maker, he said. The pocket maker says to me, Marie, take the lining making, because pockets, you got to match the stripes. See, like these stripes over here, if it has a flap, you know, you got to match your stripes, mm-hmm. got to match just mm-hmm. exactly. And he says, and it's very tedious, and it'll be hard on your eyes and all that. So, take, so I become a lining maker. I was doing pretty good.
What were you making there? I mean, in terms of wages and stuff. When you got on the machine, was there a big difference?
Oh, sure. The naturally, when you're piecework, the faster you are, the, you know, you've got to get yourself a system of how to handle it. So you develop. As time goes on, you make more and more and more, you know. So, that was